saw that fire.
All right, good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Grant, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Those are located across the hall, kind of cat a corner through the foyer, up a short flight of stairs. At this time, please take a moment to look at your cell phones and make sure they're on silent. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step two. Please welcome our panel this evening, Candida and Laura. We'll start there, right? Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And the first paragraph will begin on page 44. And bear with me, this is a long one. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope. We were not true alcoholics, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problems. Go ahead.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Candida.
Candida.
I'm a little nervous. I wasn't expecting this, but I'm kind of glad I'm here sharing. It's a God thing, totally. You know, hearing this reading, what it made me think of, I remember there was a time I was talking to this girl, this is like maybe a couple years back, and she was going through something, and she said, well, I'm just going to turn that over to God. I'm like, what? How did you learn that? And I was like floored. She's like, oh, you know, in my upbringing and my Catholicism, and I was like, I was raised through all these different churches, went to church like all the time, was in Sunday school, and I just never heard those messages for some reason. So it kind of floored me that this person didn't have to come to AA to learn, you know, something like that. You know, I had to be beaten and bludgeoned to have an open enough mind to like learn things like that. Because I did not get those messages from the religion that I was around. And it wasn't probably that they weren't saying it, I just didn't hear it. You know, I like those two questions that it says in the beginning about whether you're an alcoholic or not. Like, it's two simple things. Like, when I start, can I stop? No. And when I make a decision to stop, can I do it? No. So it's really simple. It's not 100 questions. It's two simple questions. And I qualify for both of them. You know, like I said before, you know, growing up, I came from a pretty tortured, abusive childhood. And, you know, I grew up in a lot of religious experiences. And my experience with the whole God thing growing up was not a good one. So when I came to AA and they talked about, like, higher power, I was like a little afraid that this was like a born-again Christian cult, and I was like, oh no. But I was in so much pain, I was like, if that's what this is, you know, then I'll do whatever it takes. And thank God this is AA has never been that way. I've never been told like how to believe in a higher power. There's something very beautiful in the big book. It says like all we need is like a willingness, you know, to believe. And I thought, like, how beautiful is that? Like, that's such simple terms. Like, I remember growing up in church, it was like, you have to do this and that and this and that and this and that to, like, earn God's love. And I hear it's, like, just a simple willingness. And that's so comforting, so beautiful. And I'm grateful for my first sponsor. The first thing she had me do when I came into the program, she's like, I want you every morning to write a letter to God. You know, and she's like, and if you don't have a higher power, borrow my higher power. And, you know, I did that religiously, and you know, and I'm so grateful that she taught me how to do that. And her analogy was, she's like, Candida, if you're in a relationship and every morning you just get out of bed and run off to work and don't talk to your partner, are you gonna have a good relationship? And I was like, no. She's like, it's the same thing with your higher power. You know, if you don't take that time to build that relationship, you're not gonna have, you know, a relationship. And you know, doing that, you know, rigorously, like, she was right. I started to build this relationship. And, you know, I love at the end where it says, you know, that's the purpose of this book, is to, like, enable us to have this relationship with a higher power. You know, that's probably the greatest thing that AA has given me. And, you know, the steps are so beautiful. For me, they're miraculous. Like, I work them, and then they work me. And I remember, I don't know how many years I was in the program, but because of the program, I became very open-minded to all kinds of spiritual paths. And I was on a boat with some people, and they were a married couple, and they were saying that they had done this like religious retreat, and because of it, it had changed their life. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm open to that. I would check it out. And they're like, okay, well, it turned out to be an Emmaus retreat through the Catholic Church. And I went, and it turned out to be the church I was baptized in was hosting it, you know? And I had all these, like, you know, growing up, I had so much defiance against religion, so much like resentment, and I just thought it was such a God shot that I went to this like spiritual retreat and it was hosted by the church that I was baptized by. What are the chances? And in Miami, there's a lot of churches, and so it was really cool. And you know, going to that, it was so nice because I got to do that weekend and be present with those people and like get a lot from it, you know. And because of AA, I can probably go into a synagogue, I can go into a Buddhist temple, I can, you know, learn about Sufism, and I can take what I like and leave the rest. I can't take what I like and leave the rest here, but I can do it there. And I didn't know that as a child. And you know, I'm so grateful for that power, you know. And I think the best analogy I've ever heard of, like, the relationship with the higher power is like a lighthouse, you know. Like a lighthouse, you know, the light will shine on you, and then there's a moment of darkness, but the light is always going to come back around. And I know that in my recovery, there are times where I feel that connection. I feel really on the beam. And then other times where I just feel like I'm in the dark. But I know if I keep on doing the things that I'm supposed to do, like keep on doing my morning meditation, go to meetings, work with others, you know, that light will come back and shine on me again, and I'll feel that presence. And that's been my experience. And that's all I have to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Laura, and I'm an alcoholic.
Pillar.
So by the time I'm at this point, step two, and I've already, you know, gone over in detail thoroughly, hopefully with my sponsor, about why I believe I'm powerless over alcohol. And, you know, and then it just summarizes, you know, after we had chapter after chapter describing what step one is, it just breaks it down, like you just said, in two sentences. If I can relate to either or both, you know, when I start drinking, do I have control over the amount that I take? Pretty much 99% of the time, no, I don't. And then when I decide, make a decision to stop drinking, am I able to stay stopped? And the answer is no. And so just answering those questions alone makes me an abnormal drinker. And so if I can concede to that, then, you know, I get to move forward in step two. And I never felt that I was an atheist growing up. And I would have told you that I wasn't an agnostic either. But the way that I lived my life as if there were no God. And so I might as well have been an atheist or an agnostic. You know, for me, I was all about trying to feel powerful my entire life. You know, I wanted to be dominating in my relationships. I wanted to be the boss. I wanted to make the decisions. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And, you know, to tell me that lack of power is my dilemma, you know, I'm like, ugh. But truly, that is the truth for me. When I discovered alcohol, it made me feel invincible. It made me feel powerful. All these things that I kept trying to feel when I was sober, you know, I kept trying to wrest satisfaction out of my relationships with friends and at school and, you know, in my family. And I kept failing. And then when I discovered alcohol and what it did for me, it made me feel that feeling of powerful. But it was an illusion. It wasn't real. And by the time I get to step two and I'm at this crossroads in my drinking, and I can't imagine going on drinking as I am, and I can't imagine not being able to drink, that's a problem. And that was really scary for me. Because I'm like, how can I survive the rest of my life not being able to use this thing that makes me feel, even though it's not real, it makes me feel so powerful and feel in control and feel at ease and feel okay. And now you're telling me I don't get to do that anymore, but you're saying that if I do this, I'm going to tap into a power that's greater than me and this thing called God. And so that's a little intimidating for somebody like me because I have all these old ideas of what I think you mean when we're talking about spiritual principles and God. And of course, I think it's something about church and religion. And it's not that I was totally against something like that, but I think for me, I had this concept that if I was going to be a spiritual person, that meant I had to be good all the time. And I knew I didn't have the power to do that. I can never steal again, I can never lie again, I can't cheat, I can't, you know, and I'm just like, I would love to be able to be that kind of person. I just didn't see it happening. I didn't see that kind of change coming over me. And I thought that I was going to have to be a saint in order to get this. And I don't know, this is just what I come to the table with. Nobody taught me that. I just showed up at the door thinking all these things. And, you know, I had read a lot of books. I'd gone to a lot of therapists, taken a lot of prescriptions, you know, with and without the consent of a doctor. And, you know, and I had all these grand, lofty ideas of what it was to be a good person. But like I said, I couldn't live up to those moral codes. You know, I had moral codes for other people in my life that you should and shouldn't do this, but when it came to me, you know, the rules don't apply. You know, so for me, not having this understanding of what step two was really about, I think kind of handicapped me in the beginning because I was prejudiced and I was like, I don't know what you guys are going to ask me to do, but I feel like it's going to be too hard, but it really is not that difficult. It's so simple, and we get to cover that a little bit more on in the readings here. But the thing that was kind of scary in this reading is that it says there was a kind of a threat. It said, after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. So this is telling me that if I relate to alcoholism and I'm identifying with step one, I'm screwed. Like, this is my only option. I do this or else. And I can tell you that had I not had the consequences that I had leading up to getting to this point in my recovery, that I probably would not have done this. I would have not gone through with the rest of the process because it just seemed too hard to change. It talks about a psychic change, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, this is something I'm going to have to manufacture myself, and that's why it seems so hard. But what I didn't understand was this is something that's going to be transmitted to me as a result of taking the actions, and it's not really something I'm doing. All I have to really do is show up and do what it says in the book, and then the change just comes over me. That's all I have. Thanks.
Next reading will be on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect the contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard turns with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive, or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy. And I do not come to step two out of virtue. I come to step two out of desperation. I come here not because I'm ready to be faithful or good, as was previously shared, but because there is nowhere else for me to go. I've brought everything I have to bear on my problems. I've tried to put down the alcohol. I've run through a lot of reservations, like if I could only get my ducks in a row, then I would be okay. If I had a better man, if I had a better job, if I had a healthier bank account, if I weighed whatever less, if, you know, whatever. I do everything I can, and I'm a pretty personally powerful person. I definitely think faster and move faster, surprisingly, than most everyone else, and it got me nowhere. I mean, I ran as hard as I could away from alcohol, and it never worked out for me. When I see that powerlessness means that I've lost control, that I do not have a choice, when I understand that step one does not mean don't drink, don't drink, don't drink, what it actually means is you are always going to drink. There is nowhere else for me to go except looking for a power greater than my own, because I've exercised my considerable power. not just with the men and the money, but education, therapy, prescription medication, whatever it is, I've tried all of it. But I get here and I kind of stop dead in my tracks because I have a real pesky God of my childhood that's kind of banging around in my head, and he's punishing, and he's kind of like Zeus, and he's got a thunderbolt. And for some reason that has still stuck in my head that it makes sense, or also that maybe he's kind of Santa Claus and he's making a list and he's checking it twice, and I know I've been naughty. I know it won't turn out well for me. So I've got all this stuff in my head about who God is. So I can't say that I come to this with wide open arms and, you know, lay it on me, God, I'm ready. But I kind of come crawling and dragging butt down the road because there's just nowhere else for me to go. And fortunately, I don't have to do the heavy lifting here. I don't have to understand who or what God is to just come to believe. And everyone's heard that we come to, and then we come to believe. I had always been taught in my religious upbringing that faith was not worth a darn if it was not blind faith. If I could not just blindly, I know I'm messing this up, aren't I? I'm weaving in and out. If I could not blindly believe. And I'm just not like that. I'm an alcoholic. I'm skeptical and I'm suspicious and I pretty much think everyone's lying. You gotta work really hard to convince me that one, you know what you're talking about, and two, you're telling the truth. So this is a stumbling block. But I don't have to comprehend who God is. I don't even have to believe that it's God. I just kind of have to show up, and I've run through the reservations. I don't have any more options, and just be willing. That's all I have to do here, is just have a little bit of willingness. And again, the willingness did not come to me because I'm virtuous or godly or even spiritual at this point, because like Laura, spiritual sounds like being a missionary in Africa, and I don't like dirt and I don't like bugs, and it's just never gonna happen. So if that's the way, I'm going straight to hell. And my mom's been telling me that all along, so it's a possibility. But that's not at all what happened. It is broad and roomy. As a result of working the rest of these steps, I have a process that takes me from willingness to faith to belief. I don't have to just drag myself up to faith at the get-go. I just have to show up, recognize the fact that there's nowhere else for me to go, and open my mind a little, and open my heart just a teeny little bit, because I don't have much of a heart at this point either. In fact, my heart is shut down. My soul is in exile because it cannot live inside of the body that has been doing all kinds of nefarious crap for an unknown period of time. So is God going to come roost in that? I didn't think so. Fortunately, it's all on him. It's not on me. That's all.
Thanks, Amy. So this part of step two, I remember the first time I was considering step two, and I was in rehab in Florida, and the place I was at, they had us do step one, two, and three out of a workbook, and it was not AA or approved literature, but, you know, it was a good start. And I remember I had to write all my ideas of what I thought God was, and I didn't have a sponsor helping me through this part. And I remember getting so stressed out because I thought that I had to fully define and comprehend God in order to get step two. And I remember I had people that were around me that were Christian Bible thumpers telling me I had to, you know, go that way in order to get this. And then I had other people that were like hippy-dippy, gypsy, free-flowing, you know. And I was just like, which one is the truth, you know? And I remember I had this moment where I, like, ran off to the beach, and I was by myself sitting outside. The moon was up, and I was just like screaming, like, what do you want me to believe? Like, what is the right answer? And I was really scared. I was thinking that if I didn't get this right, that I was not going to get sober. And I don't know what happened in that moment because I didn't have any guidance, but other than me talking to, you know, the sky at the time, you know, and I just remember feeling really small. Like, I was looking out at the vast ocean and the moon and the waves, and I was just like, man, like, I'm so small in comparison to, like, how big this earth is. And I had this calm feeling come over me, and the only thing that I remember feeling was that you don't have, like, all you need to know is that I'm here, and you don't have to figure everything out. Like, you're in the right direction. And later on, when I ended up coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and going through the book with a sponsor and getting to step two, they explained to me this part, you know, and that all I needed was a willingness to believe, and that was it. I didn't have to, you know, join a church, or I didn't have to make a concrete decision about exactly what it was going to look like for me. I just needed to say, yes, I believe that there's something bigger than me out there that might be able to help me. And it was that simple. And as soon as I was like, okay, yeah, they were like, okay, we've done step two, let's move on. And I'm like, man, like, how is that? I didn't have to answer all these questions, like 50 questionnaire about step two to move forward. And that was really cool. Later on, too, I've experienced, there's a lot of people who have very strong opinions about this subject. And, you know, I've had people tell me that I shouldn't go to church and I shouldn't go to specific churches. And, you know, just the willingness to believe in a higher power was good enough. And maybe it is for some people, but, you know, I'm pretty sure that this is saying that I get to choose what my higher power is. It doesn't matter what you think it is for you. I get to explore, you know. So if I want to go to church and different types of churches, I can do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I don't want to go to church, then I get to do that too. If my sponsor believes something completely opposite from me, that's okay. You know, my sponsor and other people in AA don't get to define my higher power for me, and I love that. I'm definitely somebody who's rebellious by nature, and anybody trying to tell me what to do, I'm pretty much going to do the opposite. So, and it's taken me a lot, you know, I've continued to seek. You know, the way I was 10 years ago in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm a lot different today, you know, with how I feel about my relationship with God and the things I'm willing to try and the things that, you know, I'm open to. I continue to grow, and I love that. I don't have to stay where I was 10 years ago with my faith. And the coolest promise that we just read in here was that God doesn't make too hard of terms to those who honestly seek. And that has been my experience. I've been through some really hard times, I would say harder in sobriety than ever before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a hard time coming to Alcoholics Anonymous too. And I would say that that promise is the truth. That as long as, no matter what is happening and falling down around me, as long as I hang on and cling to hope, faith that eventually this is gonna, like, all make sense and the light's gonna come back on, that God can make things manageable when it seems like it's totally chaotic. So I can testify that that is the truth.
Thanks. We'll continue on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
I know we're not gonna read the appendix on spiritual experience. But it's really important for me to remember that what's happening in the first three steps is that I'm giving up. I'm giving up. I'm surrendering. I'm waving the white flag. I'm saying that my way has not worked. And I've tried really, really hard. but I cannot rely on my magical magnifying mind, which is always looking for trouble and always finding it. I cannot rely on my body that has an allergy that is always going to keep me drinking. And I cannot rely on all the other things that previously staved off misery, you know, new love, bigger bank account, blah, blah, blah. But it's frightening to think that I'm going to have to just kind of walk into the unknown of this spiritual experience, because the way that I've been living my life is as if it's just me in a vacuum, that everything that goes on in the world is about me. Everything that I do is affecting all of you. What you say, what you believe, it all has something to do with me. And self-centeredness is definitely the root of my trouble, but in the mind of a chronic alcoholic like I am, it makes sense that I should be thinking about myself all the time, that I should be taking care of my boundaries, that I should be watching to make sure you're not poaching on anything that belongs to me, that I should be constantly making lists of what needs to be done in order for me to be okay, that I should be constantly gathering up whatever I think I need in order to be secure, that I should constantly be managing your impression of me so that you can feel about me the way I need you to feel about me, so that I can then feel that this way about myself. That's insanity. It's insanity. Insanity looks so much worse when I can't blame it on drunkenness. And when I come to step two, I'm not drinking anymore, but I'm still crazy. I'm still very occupied with what you think of me and what I can do about that, because I'm absolutely sure that I'm the most interesting, compelling person you've ever laid eyes on, and all you're doing is thinking about me. And it's driving me nuts. Because I want to massage it and I want to manipulate it. And not just what you think of me, but what's going on in the world and how that affects me. As if who is president has something to do with me personally. Like it's going to take away something I think I need in order to be okay, or prevent me from getting something I want in order to be okay. The insanity of my mind is just swirling and swirling and swirling. And then I try to apply my mind to fix this stuff, and it gets exponentially worse until it ends up with crunched metal, smoke in the air, blood on the ground, and someone's crying, because that's what I, on my own power, know how to do. I swear before God, someone's always crying. The Buddhists say that the mouth is the front gate of all misfortune. And it is absolutely true of me. And so I'm coming up to this thing. I got to come to believe in a power greater than my own, which I'm not thrilled about thinking anything's more powerful than I am, but I'm willing to give it a whirl. And then I kind of have to step off into the unknown. And there's just no way for me to do that unless I am 100% vested in step one. Because once I really see the desperateness of my situation, I've got a death sentence. Alcohol is going to kill me. It is a death sentence. When I see how desperate that is, step two is kind of like, well, heck yeah, there better be a power greater than my own. So I'm going to have to be willing to have a spiritual experience. I'm going to have to be willing to go through this ego-crushing thing. And my ego is pretty heavily defended, because I need to believe what it is that I believe about me. That I'm the smartest kid in the classroom, that I'm, you know, whatever it is, that the whatever the character is that I'm currently playing in order to provoke you into feeling the way that I want you to feel, so that when you look at me, I can get a little buzz because you like me, and that means that I can like myself, and then I can go on my way rejoicing. And it's just so crazy up in there that there has to be something to quiet the noise. Because now I'm coming out from behind the bottle. This isn't just about the insanity of alcohol. This is about the insanity of my mind. And I've been trying to use my mind, which I love. I love it. I call myself Big Brain with capital B's. I really, really rely on my mind. And it's the thing that's gotten me in the most trouble. So I'm here, I'm open, and I'm willing, and something has to happen. And fortunately, that's one of the places where fellowship comes in, because I show up in these rooms, and you're not telling me that I need to go take communion. You're not telling me that I need to go to an ashram. You're not telling me what I have to do, except show up, be open, and be willing. It's amazing. I mean, my big brain will complicate the heck out of it and definitely get in the way of real progress. But when I'm able to set aside everything I think I know, which is everything, things start getting better fast.
That's all.
Thanks, Amy. You brought up some really good stuff. I was going to actually skip on that part because I felt like I already covered it. But the whole step two, being restored to sanity, in the beginning it was just about the obsession to drink for me, you know, because I thought when I got sober, if I could just stay sober and not drink, that everything was going to straighten out for me. And I can tell you that the biggest benefit, or probably the only benefit I got from just not drinking, was I wasn't getting DUIs anymore, alcohol related charges, but I was still suffering. My alcoholism didn't end because I put the drink down. And in fact, the longer that I stayed dry, I relate to everything that she just described that goes in her head is the same kind of stuff that I do, but I don't want to tell you that I think that way. You know, when I go home and when the times when I drink, well, at least you're honest, you know, I'm the same way, but I like to pretend that I'm not that obsessive.
I'm okay. I don't need anyone's help to make me look bad. It's good. I'm all right.
So, but the step two, being restored to sanity, is all that stuff, you know, the way that I think is why I always end up picking up a drink again. The way that I feel, the way that I'm reacting to life. And I think I too am so smart that I can figure this out. You know, I can, when I'm in a situation and I'm like, I'm the brainstorm, and I will come up with every possibility that I could be. Like, I'm in this situation, what's going to happen? I'm always trying to predict the future because I have to be in control. And I will come up with, it could happen like this or this or this or that. And I live my life like that all the time in all my relationships. And it's not fun. But this is asking me to stop doing that, or to try and try to trust that God is going to take care of the outcome. If I just do my part and stop thinking that I have control over how things are going to turn out, you know, especially when it deals with other people, that I need to just set it aside. Just like I love the set aside prayer. And starting to practice my life like that has helped to relieve some of these, you know, I live and I'm full of anxiety all the time, or depression. I'm fearful. I'm full of fear because I'm always trying to figure it out, or I'm regretting the past, things like that. And coming to believe in a power greater than myself is one of my first tools in sobriety that tells me that it's okay to not have all the answers. And in fact, it's a much more comfortable way of life to not have all the answers and just learn to go with the flow and start practicing turning things over. And that's all I have.
So now we'll be on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
I definitely have all these bedevilments. I'm sure that I actually had all of them just today, maybe in the last half an hour. And definitely a basic solution of these is much more important than space travel or anything else, because it is these things that will dominate me back into, I've got to take a drink. The systematic selfishness that runs my life. I'm miserable and depressed because you don't treat me the way I think I deserve to be treated. I'm fearful, though, because I don't really think I'm worthy of being treated any better. I am useless to other people because what I call being helpful is actually being dominating and controlling, and you try to get the heck away from me while I'm doing that, but I'm thinking, but I'm so helpful. How could they be walking away from me? And of course, I'm so smart, so why wouldn't they want my help? I'm unhappy just because that's my natural state. My natural state is I'm pissed off and no. Whatever you suggest that was not my idea first, it's an automatic negative. No. The big no is going on with me all the time. And of course, life has got to be the big yes, or it's really not worth living. So I've thought myself into a box of misery. I've manufactured misery. And my selfishness that I actually think is a way to protect and promote my self-interest and thus make me happy is the actual thing that is causing me to be miserable. And I take a look at all these things on my own power. On my own power, could I be separated from alcohol? No. On my own power, can I stop myself from being miserable and depressed? No. On my own power, can I have normal relationships with other people? No. I can't even have a normal relationship with myself. If God is not in the mix, it's agony with me. Just me alone in a room. I like to operate as if my own self-interest is the foundation of all morality. Therefore, whatever I'm doing that's going to get me what I need is probably okay, because it's going to get me what I need. And of course, that doesn't work for any of you. And then I'm walking around in this me against the rest of the world mentality. And I am grandiose as an alcoholic, so that kind of turns me on a little bit, thinking, screw the world, I'm going to do what I need to do. But again, it's no way to live. And I cannot live and be sober. I cannot be productive. I cannot be usefully whole unless this stuff starts getting worked out, unless there's a way for me to live beyond all of these things. We're not going into the next paragraph, but I love these next sections because they're talking about logic and they're talking about the Wright brothers. And when the Wright brothers flew, science had absolutely proven that man would never fly. When Galileo proved that the Earth was at the center of the universe instead of the sun, they had absolutely believed something oppositional for hundreds of years. And I think he might have almost been burned at the stake. He might have been. I can't believe I'm blanking on a scientific fact. I am. But it wasn't good, whatever. And so every few hundred years, what we believe, what I believe, changes completely. So the sun was the center of the universe, then the earth was the center of the universe. Man would never fly. Now man flies all over the globe. So it stands to reason then that in another couple of hundred years, what I see, feel, hear, believe, and taste is going to be absolutely meaningless. And the realm of the spirit is going to be the only thing that's real. And step two is the first place that I get a little taste of that, of what's real, that all is in divine order, all is well. There's love everywhere available at all times, no matter what the circumstances are. That's some stuff I can sink my teeth into. That's some stuff that makes my way of figuring it out with my power, and then maybe having to take a drink when I fail with my way on my power. That's something I really want to stick with. Step two kind of feels like it's just going to organically unfold into the next thing. Just like I barely had to do anything to get from step one to step two, I'm going to get set up in step two to kind of barely move over the top into step three. And it's just magical. That's all.
Good stuff. Yeah, 52. I've had to read that page a lot when I'm having problems and the sponsor's like, have you read page 52? Is that what's going on with you right now? And I thought, like I said before, I thought when I got sober, this stuff was not going to happen anymore. Because that's exactly what my life looked like when I was in my cups. All these things, depression, anxiety, fighting with people all the time. I couldn't keep a job. I was angry all the time. And I didn't see how I was ever going to get to a different place in my life and just be okay and be... I didn't even have to be happy. I just wanted to be content and not suicidal anymore. You know, so when I got sober and I came to AA and I started making a beginning in my steps, I thought that this, you know, now that I'm sober, I shouldn't be having problems with this stuff anymore, but I was. It wasn't quite as bad. You know, I was able to finish college and I got a job, so I had some minor improvements in my life. But I was still having mood swings and temper tantrums at times, and definitely problems with relationships with my family. And you know, when I decided I wanted to try to date in sobriety, I started having difficulties there. And then all of a sudden, you know, as soon as you get mixed up in a romantic relationship with somebody, and then all of my character defects start coming surface, and fears just way intensified. And you know, I could probably say that I felt like I was crazier in sobriety than I was before coming here. And I was really embarrassed about that. I felt just totally out of control, and I didn't get to use a substance to calm me down. So, like, I'm left with all these feelings that I'm not used to feeling because I used to just numb out all the time, and now I have to feel... You know, I get to feel happy sometimes, but now I gotta feel anxiety and sadness and anger and fear and panic, and I don't know how to deal with that stuff, you know? And that's where this whole higher power thing and learning to trust and have faith has really been a game changer in my sobriety. I can tell you the first time I went through the steps and had a few years sober, even though I told you I believed in step two and all these things and I'm turning my will over, I didn't act as if I believed. I continued to pray selfishly for very specific things that I wanted to happen because I thought that life had to look this way in order for things to be right in the world and just and fair, and for Laura to be, like you said, for Laura to be okay. And the minute that things didn't go the way that I thought I should be rewarded, I would move into a victim mentality and think that God's against me. So I continued in sobriety to struggle with my concept of God. And I was still seeing that I felt like when things went good, God was rewarding me, and if things went bad, God was punishing me. And that's a really deep, ingrained old idea that I have. And it takes, like, even when I chisel away at it and I get better, I still have a tendency to go back there when I'm in pain, even to this day, where I feel like, have I not done good enough, God? You know, why do you keep allowing these bad things to happen? And that's just something that I don't know if it's just a human thing or I'm just not quite there yet in my faith. But that's why I keep seeking, because I know for me that if I completely lose faith in God and I stay in that place where I'm like, you know what, I'm done with you, God, I'm in a lot of trouble. If I ever get to that place and I totally shut out, you know, God, then I'm probably going to drink again without a doubt or do something worse. Because that is what my alcoholic mind does. I self-destruct, and I'll destroy you too in the process. You know, so when it's talking about having this readiness to change my point of view, you know, the parts that we didn't read in the book is talking about, like, every year, okay, they come out with a new iPhone, and it's going to be bigger and better, and, you know, then the last one works just fine, but I have to have this new thing, and, you know, and I'm always throwing away something old for something better that's supposed to work better. And I do that constantly today with other things, but it's hard for me to buy into that and think that this God idea is not going to just help me with my obsession to drink, but with all of my problems, especially my personal relationship problems. So, you know, I'm at the place in my sobriety now where I have faith that God has removed my obsession to drink, but can I have faith that he can do that with other stuff in my life? And yes, I do. But again, it's the whole practicing of turning over and letting go, the tight grip that I have. You know, I have a lot of experience where I will want to run the show again. And so I stop. I might pray for a little while, and I'm like, okay, God, I'm going to have faith. I'm going to be patient. And then I get to a place where I'm losing patience, and I'm like, this is not happening fast enough. And I feel like I got to make some decisions to get back into control. And every time I do that kind of stuff, it makes me crazier and crazier. And I usually end up stepping on people's toes. They retaliate. And then I'm like, you know, I just made everything so much worse. And I'm even more anxious and more upset. And I'm right back to square one. Like, okay, let's go back to this. Turn it over. Trust in God. And for me, this is just something I have to, I don't want to say learn again and again, but really I have to just surrender to this concept again and again in my life. That's it.
So we'll be on Appendix 2, page 568, the last part of that reading. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable.
This whole appendix kind of lets me know that what I'm really dealing with here, when I've come out from behind the bottle, is an issue of self-reliance versus God-reliance. Agnosticism is my self-reliant way of living. I'm looking at the world through a filter of self. I'm living in the world according to Amy. Or I'm living in the Amy show, and I'm the director, and I'm the writer, and I'm the star, and you're the bit players, and you come and go, but nobody really cares about what happens to you. It's all about me. And it's an agonizing place to be. This lets me know that I do not have to read every book on religion or on philosophy. I don't have to get a cleaned up, purified heart, because who knows if that's ever going to happen. But all I have to do is show up and be open and be willing and listen. I am a person who never really listened to anyone because, again, nobody's smarter than me. But when I start listening, when I start paying attention, when I work with a sponsor who helps redirect my thinking, when I'm asking God to direct my thinking, stuff starts to happen. I start looking at the world and I see that maybe things don't make sense, but it all does seem to be going in the right direction. Maybe in this moment, all I see are jaggedy edges, but it appears that there's kind of a master jigsaw puzzler up on high looking down at all these jaggedy edges and these crazy colors, and they're getting fit together. Because retrospectively, I can always take a look and see, I know exactly why that happened. I see how perfectly and gracefully and graciously that all fit together, that there are no mistakes. And frankly, at this point, I got to be thinking about that, because I cannot live and stay sober if I'm looking at everything saying, that's screwed up, that shouldn't be that way. I'm not listening to that guy. His socks don't even match. Because basically what I'm saying is, whoever this power greater than myself is, he's more screwed up than I am. He isn't doing a good job at all. And as I fellowship and become into relationship with other people, and I hear their stories, and I realize that their stories are my stories, and their hearts are my heart, I find out that I can look at the world and have a vision of what's right, instead of what my chronic alcoholic mind is, always looking for what's wrong, always looking for the angle so that I can fix what's wrong, make it better for me. I start finding out that there is a plan, and it's not my plan. And again, I'm not coming to all this stuff because I've become virtuous or spiritual. I'm coming to this stuff from the back end, which is I've screwed up everything I've ever touched. There's just nowhere else to go except tell the truth about myself, which is, as smart and as great as I think I am, I've screwed up everything. Everything I touch has just turned to ashes around me, no matter how hard I've tried, no matter how much I have marshaled my personal forces, it hasn't happened. And I look and I listen and I hear from my sponsor, I hear from my fellows that there's a way to live and things will start to make sense. I have a sponsor now who has me do a gratitude list. When she first assigned that to me, I thought, that is way low level recovery. I'm not doing that. I am so far beyond a pitiful gratitude list. I mean, I thought I was probably going to have to get another sponsor, honestly. But I started doing that gratitude list. And what happened with that pissy little exercise on a daily basis was that I started going through the day looking for things to be grateful for, because I knew I was going to have to make this list. And the more I looked for things to be grateful for, the more I saw that there's every reason to be grateful in every moment, in every day. That's a spiritual experience. That's high-level recovery. That's everything. So I was honest. I don't like what you're assigning me to do. I'm open. I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm willing. I actually do it. I email it in every day. And it turns out that everything is different when I'm just willing to listen to someone other than me. When I'm just willing to step outside of the world, according to Amy, for a little while and see what it's like. And it turns out that it's all very good. Thanks.
Well, we're running out of time. I was just going to say that, again, because I overcomplicated this, it says most of us think that awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. So if I'm just aware that there is a power greater than myself, then I'm already having, I'm beginning to have a spiritual experience, and that's pretty cool.
We do have one more reading. We won't share on it, but page 17. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupants are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in a powerful cement which binds us, but that in and of itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. All right, back to business. We pass the seven tradition basket. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Real quick, can we just thank this beautiful panel again? Are there any AA-related announcements?
On the 18th of November, Fisky Pog will be having a gratitude and action workshop and a night of fellowship. Doors open at 6 for food, potluck style fellowship. 7 p.m. two-speaker panel. Thank you.
Thanks, Kyle. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. All home group members, will you raise your hands? Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, we'd like to get your first name and welcome you.
Alice, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
hey, Alice.
Alice.
Welcome.
Hi, I'm Eileen, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Eileen.
There is literature over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. If you can fold it, it's free. Books and other hardbound literature are at cost. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship is AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, one more time, just give them a round of applause. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol right up the road from 21st Colonial. And can we get a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs, 164?
I will.
I see Sarah's hand.
Okay.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the